Is everyone awake after lunch? Kind of figured maybe everyone would be asleep and we just slide right through this and get on that. Does anyone else notice that the first three letters of Google's last name is G-I-S?
Yeah.
I noticed that when we were... just looking at that. Good job. My name is Dan Rios, Calaveras County. I'm an assessment cadastral analyst there with the county. Thank George and Andrea for inviting us to speak today. This entire discussion that transpired through the web with all the emails, and Jim, thanks for all the work you've done there, because I think that's really opened up a whole world of discussion for just any topic. You know, a lot of things that we may be going through as a small county, a lot of the larger counties have already experienced, or, you know, vice versa. Having those open lines of communication and not having to reinvent the wheel kind of really saves us a lot of time. And with the way budgets are and the lack of staff, I think time is really of the essence for many of us. Can you just show hands to see how many people maintain their assessment maps just in a CAD environment? How many maintain their assessment maps in a GIS environment only? How many are doing both? That's where we are, and that's where I'm going to kind of be speaking, you know, from that. Just kind of give you a background. I didn't go to the extent of doing a PowerPoint presentation, but we'll have a handout in a few minutes here that will kind of show how some of the things evolve and how our process and how it looks, our workflow goes. But we had originally began our conversion from ink and Mylar into the digital mapping world back in about 1992. We started drawing all of our changes in AutoCAD, and then we print those out, and then we'd lay those down onto our drafting boards, and we'd put the Mylars over the top of it. You know, the drawing process went a whole lot faster. It made things a little bit smoother for us, and that began us into that road of using AutoCAD. We purchased AutoCAD just right around 1992, 93, and actually we purchased it from California CAD Solutions. You know, and so those guys have a great knowledge base. If you guys, you know, some of you that are using them as vendors or not using them as vendors, if you have a choice, I don't mean to be making a plug for them, but of a lot of people we talk to, they're AutoCAD experts, you know, so we use them for training quite often. In 1997, we had a project that was headed by our local transportation committee, where their whole bright idea was, let's scan every single parcel map, let's put it together in a seamless map, and now we're in the GIS world. Well, they forgot to put in a method for maintenance. And so that project stayed for about 5 years, went nowhere. I mean, the project was completed. There was no money that was allocated for training or maintenance of the map, so that map just kind of died and became just a snapshot in time of what the partial configurations were for the county. And in 2002, because of the great infinite wisdom of our board of supervisors, they had decided that they needed to get out of managing our fire districts, and they wanted to just, you know, start sending everything out into just local agencies to have those done. So they passed it in 1999, but they didn't decide to let anybody know that we really had a deadline by 2000 to go. So by June of 2000, we had some RFPs go out, and we needed to quickly get into a single space map so that everything could be allocated properly between all the districts. We ended up hiring Vesta Resources out of out of Reading for a conversion, who in turn contracted with a company called called Nobel out of India, and they had taken all of our assessment maps that we had, along with all of the CAD data that we had been creating since 1992, and along with our local water districts, CDF, and I think PG&E may have been involved in that. I'm kind of questioning that. And all of our information, and they took that information and went ahead and they built our base map from that, from there. Any CAD information that was missing, those are the maps that got scanned and put into this, our base map in there. Everything was assembled. From there, we have the QC process. Once that final product was delivered to us, and Vestra and Calaveras County went through and had cleaned all that up, found any errors that were there. Give you an idea of what Calaveras County consists of. We have approximately 48,000 parcels split into about 48 separate assessment map books. Our map books do consist, or our map pages do consist of the raster vector hybrids. Those are all maintained in AutoCAD or using the AutoCAD products. We use LandS Development, AutoCAD Map, Raster Design, and Survey to maintain all of our pages. All new pages are completed, and they're all, I mean, all new pages that are completed are all digital. So they're all complete CAD drawings in there. And we're about to make that migration, that big step over into all the 2006 products, which should be happening hopefully here within the next month or so. We use the Esri ArcGIS 9.1 products and the Novalis Partial Editor 9.1 for all of our base map editing. And then we use the Arc Explorer 2.0, and we use that as our desktop applications for our appraisers and our assessment specialists, so that they're able to go through and do queries for particular areas on there. Donna's passing out our flow chart. Our flow chart shows the process that we go through when we do all of our map changes. And this flow chart primarily came out, was determined by the methodology that we used when we created our base map. And we examined and evaluated all of the data sources and resources that were available out there, any of the outside agencies. There was a couple, one particular fire district within our county that had AutoCAD drawings of their entire district. So we were able to use that as a resource, and that in turn had reduced the cost for us to have our seamless map created for us. You need to determine the layers or features that you need to identify, and the type of the entities that they need to be, whether they're lines, polygons, annotation layers, etc. on there. When you design your geodatabase, you really need to determine what it is that you need to manage, and then how you're going to utilize that information that you have. From that, we're able to design this workflow process that we have, and that's what Donna's passing out on there. This process we have to follow. There's a lot of things that if we do vary from this, there's some results that sometimes are not favorable to what we're doing. So. One of the other things that's really essential in building your base map is communications and cooperation from the other departments. That was one thing that we really found out early, that if you don't have the cooperation, it's going to be really difficult to be able to share data. Data sharing is an essential part of having a cohesive end product. Whether you're putting on top of your partial layer, all the zoning information. If you're not receiving any information, back from your planning department, if they're not up to date as to their changes, then anything that lays on top of yours just may not coincide. Okay, pros and cons. You know, we always talk about wood application will do it all for us. You know, and I don't think that either application can do everything. You know, there's some things that AutoCAD may be able to do that ESRI or your GIS application kind of does mediocrely. And I think that's the same way, you know, there's some things that there your GIS application can do that AutoCAD just kind of does. So a while back there was a someone who had coined the term best of breed. You know, use the tools from both software applications that are going to get you to your end goal, to your end results on there. You know, we jumped into the GIS. You know, we discovered that our GIS had difficulties handling some of the true arcs in there. This created thousands of topological errors. A lot of the times there were just zero polygons. At one point we had in the neighborhood of about 8,000 errors on our base map. And that, you can imagine, having going through and trying to find out, you know, trying to discover where these are. You see a bunch of red dots on your map, and when you zoom all the way out to the world view or the full extent, all you see is one big red blob. You're sitting there saying, I don't have a lifetime to do with the red things, you know. So something was wrong, so that's been resolved, but AutoCAD, you know, has always been able to, you know, because it is a CAD-based application, you know, it's always handled the true arcs on there. You know, there's areas within our base map that were stretched and contorted to make all the parcels fit, you know, when our base map was created. So we lost a lot of the integrity of some of the parcels that were in CAD that originally came over. Just so that an area would look good, things got stretched, things got, you know, rotated or whatever. So you don't really have that true accuracy that AutoCAD gives you when you go ahead and when you build your assessment maps using using COGO to do that. So what we have decided to do is to primarily maintain all of our assessment maps using AutoCAD because of the accuracy that was already there. And then what we do is we export all of our changes into GIS or into our ArcGIS applications. A lot of things that we have on our assessment maps, historical information, some of the fiduciary information that's there, you know, whether it might be trails, it might be mine locations, a lot of that information we don't have the time to transfer over. That's useful information. And been able to keep that. All of our assessment maps are that raster vector. Most of them are that raster vector, that hybrid configuration. So we're able to really save a lot of the information that was originally scanned from some of the drawings on there. You know, we chose to keep AutoCAD for maintaining those assessment map books because the assessment map books are for assessment purposes only. We know that out on the web, when we publish our base map, that's going to be, you know, hit by all the different departments, all the different agencies. The public's going to hit it, and there's really all they're really primarily looking for are boundary information. Where those boundaries lie, you know, where are they in location to the adjacent parcels or to the highway or to wherever they might be. The appraisers use them for an entirely different purpose. You know, so that's one of the things that we always look at is we look at what are we charged with? What is our mission? Our mission is to produce those assessment maps so that the appraisers can get out to the locations that they need to do for evaluation. You know? And a lot of times that historical information that's there really helps the appraiser in locating those properties, you know, whether it be, you know, private cemeteries or whatever there might be, some trails or et cetera. Internally, we use GIS to maintain the seamless base map for appraisal and assessment applications. Those applications range from being able to tie up our sales database to that seamless base map so that the appraiser can go in there and they're all assigned areas. They can go in there and do their book range and ask for any parcel that's sold within a certain date and with a certain value on there, whether they're structured, non-structured, et cetera, have improvements on there or not. So that's been really very useful for them. It's kind of slow going at times because you get some of the, some of the individuals that are not in favor of using technology. You know, they're used to doing things the old way. You know, and that's the way they've been doing it for years. And I'm not opposed to that. But, you know, there's these tools that are coming out and that are available that really make things a little bit simpler and actually probably a little faster, so can improve production. We use that base map internally also for thematic maps. We do our CLCA map using that. That's been great to be able to just FTP that map, that shape file, up to the Department of Conservation annually. That really works out. You don't have to worry about it getting lost in the mail or anything like that, but it can, and you have a record of when they received it, when it was opened up, because you can tell from the email response on there or from the FTP log. You know, we do have an enterprise GIS. We are using ArcSDE. So when our layers are, when our partial layer is updated, we publish it quarterly to our GIS unit, and then the GIS unit then in turn goes ahead and publishes out to the, out internally into our internet. Annually, our base map at roll close gets updated out to the web for the general public, and that's just done annually. But quarterly, we publish all of our updates that we've done so that the entire county government center has access to that. Okay, kind of getting to the whole crux of why we're talking about all this. Joe Corrales from San Benito had asked for some feedback from the counties and had asked how we are handling that transition from AutoCAD to GIS. And I guess my first response was, we've got to straddle that fence. You know, we're grazing on both sides, you know, and we're kind of just, you know, we're really feeding on the best tools in each of the products to be able to produce what we're doing, those assessment maps. And it has really increased our production. Our production that in both creating our assessment maps and in producing an updated, more often updated, base map layer. And that's really been helpful for a lot of the queries that we do. It's been a tremendous help in producing that CLCA map that we have to do annually. Some of the other things that he had kind of asked there was about his having the vendors complete and maintain all future changes and corrections to his county base map. And quite honestly, I'm not in favor of that. I kind of looked at that, and you sit back and you kind of wonder how that process would work. And kind of really looked at that and the knowledge of how the knowledge and the experience that you have within your office and your staff to produce those base maps are contained there. You know, a vendor doesn't have access to all your records, doesn't have access to, you know, the recorded documents and any of the information that you use to make the decisions that you make when you create your configurations. You know, you do them for a reason. You might have a particular mapper assigned to an area because they know that area. Maybe they grew up there or whatever it might be, but they know how those things, how those maps are supposed to be put together. Someone who's off, you know, in another county or a different state somewhere, trying to, put together your assessment maps or your base map for you, doesn't have the experience, the knowledge, or for that matter, the care that you would take in producing your maps. So That's kind of one of that's just my opinion with that. You know, you're the one that has to make the call when there's something that's in question. You know, it's your judgment. And I think that within the office and within the assessment offices is when that's going to be best. Besides, it impacts you. Their decisions impact you. If there's a problem with the way they've configured a parcel, then the questions are going to come back to you. They're not going to go directly to the vendor. And then once that, you know, question does hit you, well, then you're going to have to call the vendor and find out, hey, why is this configured this way? That response could be a week, 2 weeks, you know, down the road. So that was what my opinion is on there. And I think at this point right now, if you have questions or, you know, we're going to open this up for discussion on some of your ideas and
So you produce the parcel coverage for GIS and there's a separate GIS department, or are you the whole show?
No. We, our assessment office, our mapping department there, we maintain that parcel layer and the tax rate area layer, and then we send that to the GIS unit. That's a separate department. They're under the technical services division, and we just send them the information, and they go ahead and they build from there. If there's other departments that have, you know, zoning information, Public Works might have some road data that they want to place on top of that, then that's their responsibility. What we do is we just maintain that parcel base layer for that purpose.
Don't you get the TRAs in digital format from the state, though, or do you have to recreate and add the changes in yourself?
We end up adding the changes in ourselves on there. Our TRA layer will match what we receive back from the state. So that once the TRA layer that we're receiving back from the state is not in a shapefile format, you know, so at this time right now, we can't just drop it right in.
Okay.
On there.
So have you ever heard of the, there's an ArcGIS engine application out there by Haystead Methods that allows you to, it embeds into AutoCAD that allows you to directly edit geodatabases.
Not that particular one. What there is one that is the plugin with for AutoCAD, but right now in AutoCAD 06, there is that ability to do that, but it does not. What is it? It only interfaces with Oracle databases right now. It doesn't allow you to use any of the MS SQL. Databases to be able to get it there directly.
I don't know if you ever calculated the cost that Nobel charged you per map to convert from paper to electronic.
No, we didn't. I shouldn't say that. Part of the RFP had their quote was in that RFP, so I don't remember what that was. That was, that was 5 years ago. So.
So what features are you exporting from AutoCAD to the GIS?
Primarily just the boundary lines.
Boundary lines and label points?
And the label points in there. It has all the annotation information for the APN number on there. And with that, when we grab that partial boundary on there, we go ahead and that has the all the distance and bearing on it also.
And do you, because you're updating it quarterly, are you kind of holding these in a batch mode, all your changes, and work them at once, or are you?
We're working them monthly, and then just delivery quarterly on there. That kind of gives us to that, you know, we're not overly impacted. And this is something that we've only been able to, some of the problems that we had with the topological errors had prevented us from meeting that quarterly deadline that we had given ourselves. And so we've just recently been able to catch up with that.
Anybody else?
Do we have any comments or anything for Joe and his questions that he had?
When you say you provide the GIS data to the GIS unit, are you providing just the geometry itself, or are you also providing the assessor's role?
No, not probably. What we're providing to them is parcel boundaries, parcel lines, TRA information, APN number. None of the assessment role information, names, none of that other information goes over with it.
Okay, so they're making that connection to the role data themselves.
Yes.
No dimensions.
Exactly.
No dimensions?
No, there are dimensions on it. And annotation later on. Yes, and they just go ahead and the other departments will go from there. So they'll also be, I don't know if they're on a fourth schedule or not. That's the schedule that we're trying to maintain at this point right now.
So your dimensions go with your parcel coverage?
Our dimensions are in there. When we import, okay, there's an inverse function in the not sure if it's actually part of partial editor or going to be our GIS editor. It's an inverse that allows you to take that point, add that distance of bearing to that line that you've imported. It's in the table. It's not visible. So if you were to open up that table, if you're going to do an identification on that line, that table information would have the distance of bearing on it.
It's not a legal distance of bearing. It's just what the
line. It's just whatever came over. It's not the legal description. So if it was some code information that you put in, if it was from that recorded map, it's going to match. But we don't rely on that for our verification.
It's a code dimension.
According to geometry?
Yeah.
It is a code dimension. I thought you were asking what it is.
Not off the deed, it's a code dimension.
Code dimension from the map.
So if you stretch the boundary, it'll show whatever the code amount was.
Yeah, but we don't stretch. When we bring in our AutoCAD information, we import that data. That data does not get stretched or changed.
How do you get that good of control?
Right now, it's just kind of a we just discipline.
Okay,
discipline. And that's really what it is. A lot of training on the other mapper that we have is just. We have to maintain that ourselves. We just tell ourselves that when we bring that in, knowing that our base map has been contorted, when we bring in that, when we import that AutoCAD information, that's our true data, that becomes the golden information, and whatever's around it is going to get, we're going to fit to CAD data on that. Conflicts happen when you have two areas now where now you've had two different surveys
every day
from two different survey companies that now their location might be a little off. We do have township and range layer in there that has control on there that was taken, but that's still kind of not necessarily as accurate. You have all the corners.
Within 40 feet.
Yeah. Jim?
Just a quick question on what you just mentioned about the different information coming from two different surveyors. How do you guys handle that? If there's a common line, two different surveyors, two adjacent properties, where do you come up with a slightly different distance and bearing?
You have a coin?
No. The way we've been handling it is whichever one is the most recent surveyor.
Yeah.
So you can change from one month to the next.
It could. And that's why, we know that, we look at that GIS base map for us as, that's our overall picture. It allows us to be able to use it for inquiries, for doing, like Gula had mentioned about looking at something that might be across the other side of the river, that might be a sales that might be there, that might be without, not within that assessor's assigned area.
Another question of same topic, legal description. Somebody gets a survey on their property, they get a legal description written up. The adjoining neighbor gets a survey done on his property, gets a legal drawn up. There's a common line. So you change that line to the most recent survey. Well, now the first guy's legal description doesn't match.
On our assessment maps, we have around our APN numbers, when there is a question or there's conflicting surveys, we have some parentheses that we put on the outside of the APN number that tells us that there's a conflict there. We'll also add a note on that assessment later that there's a conflict there between that common line. Now, if it becomes a civil issue, the end of morning court should decide where that legal boundary actually is. Then at that point, new survey gets done, or, you know, the resolution comes through, or, you know, the document comes through that tells us this is what has been established now, then we'll change it to whatever the court decision is at that time. You know, when that happens, you know, you can't just, I mean, you have to notice it somehow.
The price of real estate in California, how do you get along with your appraisers?
Actually, our appraisers are pretty good. You know,
they work with you with so much a foot.
You know, there's a couple of them who might have some conflict with occasionally. You're talking about the appraisers, not our in-house appraisers. We'll talk about it.
Well, anyone that would come in to the office and say, hey, this calculates out at something different than what you've shown on your map.
You know, anytime we put an acreage on our assessment maps, okay, it's an acreage that comes from that recorded map. Anytime we don't calculate on our, I was explaining this to Joe earlier, what we have on our GIS map is we have tied into it from Megabyte, our property management system, the acreages that we have recorded from there. I have a column there, and then adjacent to that column, I have what I call an APPR acres. You can call it appraiser acres or approximate acres. So that if you have sectional land out there, you know, you're not certain what it is, you can actually get an approximate acreage from the GIS unit, calculated from the area of geometry on it. So you can get an approximate area. Unless it's surveyed, then you're going to see in that MPTS or that Megabyte acreage column, you're going to see the acreage that came from that map. In that recorded document. So you're giving both information. You're giving a true information that comes from a recorded document, and then you're given a calculated acreage that's there for the appraiser purposes. That's not something that gets published out. That becomes something that's internal. And then if you're missing the one from the property management system, you can always look at that approximate acres that's been calculated there to kind of give you an idea of what's happening.